Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
There's a pretty important question we haven't been asking enough about this high-profile head coach. It is Chuck Oliver Show on a Wednesday. And high-profile head coach, I don't think that that does justice to Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders, head coach of the Colorado Buffaloes, everything he does, you kind of just want to look at him. Was it last year's spring game? He comes out and he's got the coat on with the fur and the hat and all that. And like, I was like, all right, Deion's at home. I've never seen Deion look out of place. He's now Coach Prime. He's Deion to me. I actually stood up in an NFL stadium and yelled, Deion! Huge fan of his back in the day. I've owned exactly one jersey of an active player in my life. I'm not much of a jersey guy. Deion Sanders was a rookie. I got the red Falcons jersey with the gray 21 on it. I was like, this guy's too good. He's too good. And then it turned out that I was actually a little too literal. Deion announced, yeah, I'm too good for the Falcons. And if you're not aware, that is what Coach Prime, who you thought he was brazen when he showed up and he said, I just told all 85 guys y'all should leave. And by the way, I already got my quarterback. I'm going to the portal for everybody except I got my QB. Deion told an NFL team who spent like the third overall pick on him, I think, or fifth. Yeah, y'all aren't big enough for me. I'm too big for y'all. I need more. And here's the thing. He was right. So Deion leaves and he gets rings and goes to the Hall of Fame. And then he's a corporate pitch man and he's on NFL Network. And then he starts coaching like rec league. And then he coaches some high school, and then he coaches at Jackson State. And so now, after a few years of working his way up the ladder rapidly, but working his way up the ladder, he's head coach at Colorado. And when I say high profile, folks, it does not do justice. It's just such an understatement, but it's the best word that fits. And when I say there's an important question we have not been asking enough about Deion Sanders, about Coach Prime, very little at all until the end of the season. Does Deion Sanders have to win at Colorado? Now, here's the tough part. I need to know what win means because I think I need to know what their version right now, the administration, the real behind closed doors version of win is, because they just went from being a program that had an established, I say, a reputation that got reinforced time and again of they're kind of cheap and they're not going to spend. They signed Deion to a contract so hefty. Do you remember at the introductory press conference? It was either the AD or the president. He said, yeah, we don't have the money, but we're going to find it. Like, we have promised Deion we're going to find this money. Well, he found it. He's making $6 million a year. When I say, does Coach Prime have to win at Colorado? Folks, it's a Wednesday in April. I'm based in Atlanta. Our footprint is 9 southern states, and we're talking Colorado football. Now, are we really? I think we're talking Deion Sanders. Because we weren't really talking Jackson State, were we? And then when he went to Boulder and strip-mined the Jackson State roster, we really weren't talking about Jackson State anymore. And so he arrives in Boulder, and we all watched the first thing, that TCU game. And then we watched the next week. I think it was the next week. Was it that next Saturday that the game went to like 1:17 a.m. and it was it was that next week, wasn't it?
It was the third week.
Third week.
Season, yeah, Colorado State in week three.
And it went past 1 a.m. and folks, nationwide, we couldn't get enough of it. And all this stuff we'd always said about, well, you know, Pac-12 after dark, if you wouldn't kick off at 9 o'clock, maybe we'd watch you. Maybe if you were more engaging, we would watch you. And then last year we did, just in time for the Pac-12 not to exist anymore. So we all saw Deion out of the gate. He's Coach Prime, and they're winning at a place where they don't win. Except then, when you had the final tally, they didn't really win, not much. And when I say, does Deion Sanders have to win, if you're talking traditional win on the field, have more dubs than L's, that's not going to be easy for him. And I'll tell you, there's two things based on that. One of them is you're making it more difficult on yourself, even in a portal era, by doing it the way you are to that extreme. And the second big, and I mean, it's not even pink flag, folks. This is a red flag. Colorado had been not very good at all. And if you go back to the 2022 season, Colorado had a quarterback named JT Shrout. He had been at Tennessee. Then he went to Colorado. Last year he was at Arkansas State. And I don't think he played very much, but he was at Colorado, and he was kind of the starter in 2022. They beat Cal Berkeley in overtime. That was their win. Now, that was also a year where they played Air Force and Minnesota and Arizona, which was not very good. Like, there were some dubs kind of built into that schedule, you thought, except they didn't get any of them. And then last year, they win TCU. They beat what turns out to be an awful Nebraska team. And that was the game that got everybody's attention, because I want to say before the kickoff of the season, Nebraska had been like an 11-point favorite, and then like after week one, suddenly Colorado's favored. We're like, ooh. Then the Colorado State thing, which went into double overtime, we're like, all right, he's got something going. He got one win the rest of the way. Now, I will light a candle versus curse the darkness. Four is a lot better than one. And it wasn't like you loaded up on Sacramento State and Portland State and Northern Colorado, et cetera. Like, you beat some decent enough on total opponents, but we went 4-8. And so when I say, hey, does Deion actually have to win? What's shocking to me, this is the other thing. What's shocking to me, the second part, is, yes, they went from one win to four. Do you know the massive upgrade from JT Shrout to Shador Sanders? Shador Sanders stood in a shooting gallery for 12 Saturdays last year. And go look at the numbers he put up. Now, I'm telling you, and I've always said this, numbers from a QB, they're more an indicator than anything else, and it's always the same thing. How did you get those numbers? Shador got those numbers? Brother, he earned them. 27 touchdowns, 3 picks, completed dang near 70% of his passes. And they treated him like a pinata. So he's got a 5-star freshman coming in to play tackle. He's got more transfer linemen coming in. He actually has 2 guys, I think, coming back maybe. I think it's 2. I may be off. It is hard to keep 85 scholarships on 130 teams, 133 teams straight, but he's got the 5 stars at Seton. He has 2 other from the portal that he loves. So whatever, he's going to redo the offensive line. The point is, when you upgrade from JT Shrout to Shador Sanders, you know, in baseball, we use that stat war, wins above replacement. Folks, Shador Sanders as a quarterback, he was worth more than 3 games war. Like Peyton Manning, I remember the Colts over-under for the season was like 11.5 wins. And then the news came out, Peyton, his neck doesn't work. He won't play this year. Oh, well, who's going to be the quarterback? Heath, help me. Who stepped in for, was that a Deshaun Kizer or that's not even the right time. Who stepped in for Manning?
I think it was Jacoby Brissett, wasn't it?
Jacoby Brissett, that's it. And so you've got the Colts at 11.5, and suddenly they're not going to have their Hall of Fame quarterback, and the total dropped like 7 wins. And I looked at it, I was like, yeah, sounds right to me. JT Shrout is a perfectly fine quarterback, a guy who's been to a few places and he hasn't always stayed healthy and he hasn't always won the job. Shador Sanders is a Heisman sort of guy. When you make that sort of unbelievable leap up, and the schedule still is doable. It wasn't like you got this year's Florida schedule. I will say maybe the only example when you look at the details of going from 1 win to 4 that you kind of look at it and say, yeah, I need more. So in most other ways than on the field, and if you're thinking, well, wait, 1 win to 4, he's winning there too. It takes time. When you look at the context and how they played, win or lose, folks, he won in most other ways. In fact, he's won already. We are talking about something to do with Colorado football, and it's not Ray Caruth or who was it, John Embry? Was he the head coach? It's none of that stuff. It's not anything to do with a female on campus. It's not anything to do with grades. It's not anything, nothing. We're just talking about the head coach and winning ball games and the money that they brought in and the fact that they signed him to a 5-year, $29.5 million. So it's basically $6 million a year. December of 22, and the guy, yeah, we're going to find the money. January, they found the money. And then the spring game, they found more money. And then the season tickets, they found more money. What they didn't do is play consistently good football. And I'm wondering if they have to. I'm wondering if Coach Prime actually has to win on the field in a traditional way at Colorado. And here's the thing. I don't believe he does. Not really. Not really. I think that winning in literally every other category, and then Colorado, they can be good enough. And I mean like half plus one. Go 7-6. I think that, and it'll be a freewheeling experience in the new Big 12, and I think everybody will be just happy. So that is what is ahead. But as far as having to win like all other coaches, I don't think that that's what Deion's going to be held to. It wasn't a equal as all other coaches situation when he arrived in Boulder as well. But I don't think that that's, it's just, it is a one coach outlier in the entire sport. All right, we're going to break. We will continue next.
King of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Busy day on the Chuck Oliver Show. It's Wednesday in April, and my goodness, we talk college football year-round, and that Duncan Newsmaker line, it is full up today, about 15 minutes from now. Susan Miller Degnan, Miami Herald Canes football beat writer, been covering the team a couple of decades. We'll have her on as they are approaching a spring game. They got weirdness, by the way, in Coral Gables. And it's actually, well, I was going to say, in Coral Gables for the spring game. And then the spring game's not actually in Coral Gables. I would tell you about the weirdness is in, you know, wherever the game. No, the game's in Coral Gables this year. And that's kind of the weirdness. So we will talk to our truest reporter for Miami from the Miami Herald, Susan Miller Degnan, coming up bottom of the hour. Hour two, Chris Hummer, 247 Sports. Transfer portal expert and national college football writer. He'll be in hour two on the Duncan Newsmaker line. And then bottom of hour two, Mark Weiser, Athens Banner Herald. He is the UGA beat guy and has been for a minute. He knows what it is when it comes to the Bulldogs. He will wrap up the day on the Duncan Newsmaker line. There, the bottom of hour two. I said we got weirdness. Now, the Miami spring game, understand, it's not the easiest sell. It's not the easiest sell plenty of places. We've various years, depending on what LSU's got going on, the baseball series across the street is like way more of a draw, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of places like that. So a spring game, sometimes you kind of structure some other stuff around it so that maybe it will be hand in a glove, sort of easy for folks to do two or three things around campus, including the spring game. Sometimes it's just kind of what it is, and you don't really want to have it, and so you don't care. But in the case of the Miami Hurricanes, they don't play their games on campus, which means they don't necessarily have to have a football facility. They have to have a place to practice. They need, 120 long and 53 and a third wide. They got to have a practice field. But they do not have to have any place to have an exhibition of football on campus because they have played either at the OB, to quote Lamar Thomas, or they played in Fort Lauderdale, wherever the Dolphins played. That's where the Miami Hurricanes have played football, except for their spring game. They played their spring game. I'm not making this part up. They played spring games in the recent past, not in the 60s. In, I'll say, the last 15 years, they played a spring game at a high school. They've played a spring game in Fort Lauderdale at a tennis and soccer complex sort of thing. They are now moving it back to campus, though. This year, it will be in Coral Gables at adjacent to the Green Tree practice field. Now, if you don't know what this is where the Miami Hurricanes women's soccer team plays. Seats about 500 people, but they said we're bringing in extra, the metal bleachers for a high school playoff game when the Class A team doesn't have enough seats to host a play. That's what they're doing for their spring game. I'll give them credit. They're making it as easy as possible to get to the game. They just don't have enough room for anybody to actually attend. So they have announced that the good is they'll be here. The tough part, if you care to go, is they've got, probably less than 1,000 or so in total attendance, and it will be based on donation points and whoever the big Maca Hurricanes are. And so they've got their spring game coming up, and we'll talk about that, and Cam Ward and Mario's new coaches and everything else. But as far as the spring game and the location, it's going to be a little different.
Yeah, that's I'm honestly surprised they can get it on campus because – anytime the idea of building a stadium has been brought up there, the area around Coral Gables has
made it clear.
We don't want that. Under no circumstances do we
traffic
want
is already, yeah.
A king crowd coming in here, 40,000, 30,000, whatever crowd. We don't want it. So maybe that's why their numbers are going to be kept so low, because they don't want to get that crowd worked up about their stadium.
And by the way, I would want to interject before Heath continues. When I say, the traffic – folks, I've talked about, Heath, have you ever been to a game in Tuscaloosa, a Saturday SEC game in Tuscaloosa? Worst traffic. And you've been all over the SEC and college football, and there's plenty of small towns that doesn't need 100,000 people coming through. Tuscaloosa, I think, has the belt. Every place has traffic. That's not what I'm talking about. The traffic in Coral Gables and around campus specifically, you don't even notice the campus. You notice a big, giant university when you're driving past it. If you're in Coral Gables, you can be zipping right past the entrance to campus, and you don't even see it. It is so built up. It's basically like if Boston College decided that they were going to build a new parking deck next to their stadium. You're like, where are you going to do it? It's not typical, I was in Columbia and there was traffic getting home.
If it's worse than Auburn traffic, then that's something, because Auburn traffic's pretty bad. So you're telling me Tuscaloosa's worse than Auburn?
Oh, son, Auburn is a breeze. You got three different routes to get to 85, and then you're home. Or 280, just like out the back of Donahue. If you can get down Wire Road, you can get out past Glendine, you can get to Opelika, you can get on to 85, easy peasy, man. You got to know the way. Talk to me next time you go.
All right, well, let me tell you about somebody that is going to know every road, everywhere of every campus by the time he's done. Bear Alexander is in the news again.
Jim. Oh, yeah, I saw him.
Former Georgia defensive lineman has gone to USC, and now he's apparently going to transfer again. And as Bud Elliott pointed out, for those of us who did not pay close attention to Bear Alexander in high school, this means that Bear Alexander, beginning with the ninth grade, will have now gone to 7 schools in 7 years. He went to Terrell High, Ryan High, IMG Academy, and Skyline High, 4-for-4 in high school, 1 year at Georgia, 1 year at USC, and now hitting the market again. This is going to be the guy, Chuck, for people who are looking for someone who they can make the poster child of this is outrageous, the sport is out of control. Bear Alexander is going to be their poster boy, because they're going to say, now wait a minute, You went to a program in Georgia, won a national championship, and still immediately wanted to leave. And Kirby Smart basically has said publicly, and go after the kid, but just said, you know, he didn't fit with, there were some things there that didn't fit with what we're about.
So which, by the way, is about the most scathing comment Kirby's ever made about somebody walking out the door.
Right. So then you go out west, you without question got treated well to go to USC in the first place. The money was good. You're out there 1 year in. No coaching change. You're still at, I'll hit the portal again. You might as well just say, hey, you know, I'm here for a year. I'm signing a one-year contract at whatever school I go to. I don't know how his credits are going to transfer from place to place. If there's any issues that could at some point become a problem if he wants to transfer and make it 8-for-8. But this is the thing, Chuck. Bear Alexander will get opportunities because he can help somebody. There's not enough defensive linemen with athletic ability like that guy going around. But how do you bring a guy into your locker room? How do you bring him in and tell him he's a part of a team when everybody kind of knows, hey, man, if somebody offers $20 more, he'll stab you in the eye for it? I mean, that's not a really good feeling, I think, to bring a guy into a locker room. For those people who want change on this and who want Congress to do something or somebody somewhere do something, this is going to be the poster child.
Permission to go back about 15 years?
By all means.
You remember Richard Seymour?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so he comes out of college, and he's an All-American, this, that, and a third, and he goes to the Patriots, and he blows people up for about 5 years. Well, now it's time to get broke off. And the Patriots, they explain to him, do you know who William McGinnis is? Do you know who Lawyer Malloy is? Like, we don't pay people, all right? You're lucky to be here. And so Richard Seymour grouses and gripes, and so he gets traded to the Raiders. He had 1 year left on his contract. I remember saying, folks, you have a choice here, because the Raiders are like, we're going to sign him a long-year deal. I was like, you have a choice. You can either sign Richard Seymour to a long-term deal, or you can get a productive season from him. You can't get both. It was clearly a, I'm here for me. This is 1 year. It's time to get broke off and paid. That's the NFL, though, and I get it. Mortgage, wife, kids, grown man, all of this stuff. Bear Alexander, he has decided that he's ready for that right now. There is no need, like Maurice Claret and Mike Williams back in the day, I'm going to sue to go to the NFL. You got it better right now as far as mobility and year to year, et cetera. So I saw Bear Williams in the portal. I texted a buddy of mine in Athens. I was like, is this the guy? Blah, blah. The first thing he wrote back was 7 schools, 7 years. So, transient nature, he's fine with it.
Always college football time in the South.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season. Now back to more of the King of College Football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on Chuck Oliver's show. Been doing it for 10 years, 9 states and 60 sticks. I certainly appreciate the blessing. When an 18-year-old kid shows up on a college campus to play football, especially on the line of scrimmage, come what may, I mean, there's no way to predict how that's going to turn out, especially when maybe he's 17 and hadn't been to senior prom yet. Then there's Reuben Bain, who was an early enrollee last year, and that kid could play. And so much so that, like, a year later, you look at him and go, well, who's going to be opposite Reuben Bain? A lot of questions coming up that Mario Cristobal and the coaching staff are going to answer. I want to welcome right now. I'll call her an OG, been on the beat for more than a minute. Susan Miller-Degnan, Miami Herald, welcome to the program. How you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
Oh, I'm nothing but good. So let's start on offense. We'll get to Reuben Bain and the other defensive end in a minute. Cam Ward, it's funny, you know, you say, oh, we went to the portal and, you know, we got a quarterback. And from where? Well, they got Cam Ward from the NFL draft, kind of.
Yeah, they did.
what is the general feel around the program now that they've been able to eyeball him on a football field with teammates and everybody wearing pads?
I think it's elation. I think he's, I mean, we don't see a whole lot of practice, you know, a few minutes in the beginning. But they're outside, you know, a lot of the practice. So sometimes we see one-on-ones thrown to the receiver, maybe a DB on the receiver, but he's really good. I mean, the feeling that they are elated about him. Every single person, every coach says he's just been great since the beginning. He's a leader, everything they say. He's accurate, smart. He's prolific, right?
Yeah.
13,874 career yards, 119 touchdowns, and 30 interceptions. I mean, the guy, but he's very, very good.
We won't know. Go ahead.
Lucky they got
nothing. We won't know until the second half of, you know, maybe the Florida game when it starts to develop. But like the Tyler Van Dyke Restrepo thing, like every quarterback, you know, there's a guy, it's third and eight, where's my guy? Any guess about who that may be for Cam Ward, whether it's somebody who's maybe already showed out at practice with him or somebody that is just the likely candidate based on, you know, experience, et cetera. You know, who's going to be that guy that maybe is going to pop this season?
I think Xavier Restrepo is no doubt going to pop. He just keeps getting better and better and better. He's so incredibly fit and strong. He's making, every time we see him, plays all over the place, right? Beating out DBs, and he's just very good. So I would say he's one guy for sure. You would hope Jacoby George on the outside is going to continue his progress, although he gets some dumb penalties and, I'm not sure about the maturity factor, but he's good. He's really good. That's the answer. I mean, Restrepo is going to be really great. I think they're going to have a strong offense. This team this year, right now, from what we see, looks like the offense is the real deal. A very good offensive line. Even with a couple guys going to the draft, they got a center, you know, Zach Carpenter, transfer. And I think they got a couple other guys that are, that look very good. I think they're set there. So if they have a really good offensive line again, right. And then they have a really good quarterback. Now there was a question mark with their running back, Mark Fletcher, who's fantastic. He's definitely NFL material. However, in the bowl game, I think it was his foot or saying lower extremity, he hurt himself pretty badly. And he hasn't been in, you know, we don't have details of that, but I think he might have had also something with a shoulder or arm or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's rehabbing, okay? And he is really good, but I wonder, because they never really say for sure when he's going to be back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. If he's going to be ready or not. You never know. So they're looking for a running back from the portal.
Flip it around to defense. Name, and maybe even on in back at secondary with, you know, the two safeties gone, anybody that you think is going to make a name for himself, the alpha over there, the guy who's going to be the thumper, the guy who's going to be the leader on defense as they get to the spring game?
I think Kiko Francisco, nicknamed Kiko Malagoa or Malanoa, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
Middle linebacker. Oh, well, the spring game, he's out also after shoulder surgery. But if we're talking about this season, yep, he's the guy. He's the alpha. He's really, really, he had an incredible season. And I'm sorry, actually, Reuben Bain. I heard you say something about Reuben Bain.
Oh, yeah, the stud freshman last year screaming off the edge. I talked earlier in the program about the spring game and the location of it. Give us an idea about what, like, you get to go, right? Because there's only, like, 500 permanent seats there, and they're bringing in some other temporary bleachers. What's the scene going to be like around the spring game?
I mean, we're not even going to have really good seats. We're not going to have seats. They don't have a press box there. It's a soccer stadium where they're having it. You know, they're going to have a field set up and stuff. But, don't ask. I mean, they're saying it's all about, you know, I think it's like recruiting oriented. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to bring in a zillion recruits. And they want them to check out the campus and all that. And what they did was the people who are getting in, I mean, they didn't sell any tickets, but they're most of them, other than recruits and, other whoever they have as far as guests, UM, it will, you know, former players and stuff, it will be people, season ticket holders who are members of the Hurricane Club, they call it. Mm-hmm. So, okay, translation, donors.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
I mean, there's going to be hardly donors that probably give a lot of money. There's probably going to be not many students. How can you fit many students? It's going to be, they're saying they're going to, well, they're not saying, I mean, they expect, quote unquote, like they're going to try to cram in a whole lot of other bleachers. And get 5,000 people in there. I don't know how they're going to do that.
500 to 5,000. Yeah, if they can figure out, it is a private school. Maybe the smartest folks down there can figure it out. Susan, I appreciate you coming on today. Thank you for your time. We're going to take a quick break and come back with more of the Chuck Oliver Show next.
The Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I was embarrassed yesterday listening to him, how smart he is, how simple it was. He went 4.5 hours with the coaches. Forget the clinic. Like, he came in and met with our coaching staff. And with 3.5 hours in, I was like, Coach, would you like a water, a coffee? Would you like to use the restroom? Because I desperately had to use the restroom, you know? And he's like, I'm fine, man.
So much to talk about there. Matt Rhule, head coach at Nebraska. The Nebraska Cornhuskers, extremely proud football program. They got national championships. Not recently. They got conference championships. Not even that recently. Division championships. They had one of those in 2012. And they were actually in the Big Ten at that point. They won a division. They tied for first in the Legends. But that's Matt Rhule, and who he's talking about is, we'll talk big picture in Nebraska and where they are, because, folks, on the short list of proud, accomplished, heritage college football programs, you can't tell the story of college football without a lot of, and now we're back to Lincoln, Nebraska. I mean, it's just too present. It is just too persistent over decades and decades and decades, and not a pretty good, solid program. A program with all-time coaches, players, crowds, I think an all-time. When did they go, like 1963 to a couple years ago? They sold out every game? Is there a whole lot to do around Lincoln on a Saturday in October? Well, maybe it is the main draw. I don't know, folks. You do anything for like 60 years, I'm impressed. But a lot of what we talk about with Nebraska football, Time was national champions. Time was they ran the I-bone. Time was Nebraska. Speaking of time was, and I'm glad that we had that part from Matt Rhule about, and then the coaches. Matt Rhule, Nebraska head coach, is talking about having Bill Parcells in. Bill Parcells, who, former head coach at Air Force. He coached in the SEC back in the day. He was Vanderbilt linebackers coach. And he coached at Florida State. But then we all know when he went to the NFL and he coached for the New York Giants. He had been a defensive assistant for the New York Giants when Ray Perkins left to go coach to back at Alabama. And so he got elevated, and he had Bill Belichick as his DC. So Bill Parcells, he's an OG. He is. He's 82 years old, which the reason I'm bringing all this up is because if you are a Nebraska player, folks, it's just different. And if you're old, which means here's old. Is the first digit of your age a three? You're old to those Nebraska players. I was at a major league game, I don't know, probably 10 years ago. Let's say I was 40. My best friend was 40. We were with his father, who at that time was in his late 60s. These, I don't know, college girls came and sat a few rows in front of us. And my buddy, for some reason, maybe just out of habit, he elbowed me. And I looked at him and I was like, what, did you have a throwback moment? I said, do you realize that those three college girls look at you and I and your father, we're all three the same guy? Okay? We're all old. So understand that for a Nebraska football player, you may be listening to this program right now and go, I know all that about Parcells. Why are you talking about it? I promise you, before Matt Rhule let Bill Parcells get up and speak, like, guys, we got a very special guest today. If you would have said, Bill Parcells, give it up. Nobody would have known who he was. No, there might be three guys in that room who would have known who Bill Parcells was. So they would have had to explain all this. And then he did this, and then he did this, and then he did this. And then an 82-year-old man stood up in front of the Nebraska football team and talked, and if they were quiet during it, they were only being polite. See, that's the issue. I'm not trying to be, like, mocking to Bill. If Bill Parcells started talking right now, I would be like what Matt Rhule said about who. He said, and then he started talking to the coaches, and it was magic. I'm like, I'm sure it was. Because your linebackers coach, who you've always seen have the defense on a string, man, it is easy. It is easiest thing in the world for him to dial up some defense. He's quizzing Bill Parcells about stuff he's never thought about. He's like, wait a minute. Whoa, this is all new to me. So to the coaches, yeah. I'll tell you right now, you don't need Bill Parcells talking to your team. You don't. There was a clip. And I can't remember. Maybe it was Clay Helton. I don't want to get this wrong. It might have been Lincoln Riley. Do y'all know who Bill Withers is? Bill Withers, a singer. He had a lot of success in the 70s. Go read his story. A really unusual story about how Bill Withers had success in the music business. Well, he passed maybe, I don't know, a year ago. And so there was a clip from a couple of years ago. Heath, do you know who Bill Withers is?
Oh, yeah. No, it was Pete Carroll, though, who brought him in.
Okay, it's Pete Carroll. That was USC. That's it.
He introduced him to the team, and I'm thinking of exactly what you're saying there. They played the song, and then he's like, this is the man who sang the
song.
This
is Bill Withers.
And the reaction, like, was kind of like, oh, that's great.
If you haven't seen this, I was trying to think, who was it? Pete Carroll had brought in Bill Withers, kind of looking like he was just cleaning up or stacking some things up as in a team meeting, and there's a piano there, and Bill Withers sat down and started playing Lean On Me. Well, they recognized the song, but when he says, and that's Bill Withers, give it up! And people, yeah, I like that song, man. My mom used to play that. I promise you, Matt Rhule doesn't get it. This is why when we see things like, do y'all remember Big Cat Weekend? Gene Chizik got a super stretch. I want to say it was an orange limousine. They might have even put some blue stripes on it. And they had Big Cat Weekend where they were bringing everybody into the biggest recruiting weekend on campus. And it looked gaudy and over the top. And I was like, why at my school, we look like a spectacle on my campus. And I realized, and I'm not 17 either. And then they did the prowl or whatever they called it, where I'm not... Folks, the coaches on the staff, they hit every high school in the state over, like, I don't know, what is 3 days, 7 days, 2 weeks, whatever it was. In an orange limo? They weren't trying to recruit me. What Matt Rhule doesn't get is it's the knowledge that these kids could get from Bill Parcells. You'd do a lot better bringing in the color analyst who voices over the video game. Because they may actually resonate with that guy a little bit. It's just a commentary that until you have experienced and seen it, and in the world of sports, I mean, it's every day with me. It's a totally different world. What's up, Pete?
So there's a couple of things, actually, from that clip that I thought were interesting. One is, just imagine if you are, for example, a Carolina Panthers fan, and your team gave that guy 7 years and $62 million to run your whole organization, and you've got him like, this dude knows so much football. I mean, wow. I was blown away by the football this guy knows. It's amazing. It's like, oh, boy, that's quite a statement coming from former NFL coach competing with him guy. There's that.
I would have seen it coming.
Yeah, the other part of it, though, that I think is interesting. Remember, Belichick has his son as defensive coordinator at Washington. And if it's April, and Belichick, remember, has not agreed to do any broadcasting work for anybody. It's been reported Belichick is working on a book. It's not clear what the book will be. Probably not.
How can that be interesting?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, look, if Belichick wants to share stories or information, if you've watched him when he's done TV, he's been really good. He won an Emmy for his work on that NFL 100 show. When he wants to be, he can be captivating. It's just a question of does he want to be. So I doubt he's going to write a book where he tells stories about, you know, the time LT came in and he was bleeding from his eyes and hadn't slept in 4 days and I had to get him ready to play against the Niners. I doubt he's going to be telling
a football
that kind
version
of
the Elvis movie.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be doing that. But if he wants to, I mean, Belichick has given 10-minute dissertations at his press conferences on the development of long snappers and had it been really interesting stuff. So, but reportedly he's working on a book. He may do some stuff with Peyton Manning's company, but he doesn't apparently want to do like a weekly on-set, you know, chuckle show with, you know, Michael Strahan and Howie Long type thing. He doesn't want to do that.
Did you ever hear Chris Landry, who we used to have on, we had on every Tuesday for, or every Wednesday for a few years. He said that whole thing because he worked with Belichick back in the day. He worked for Belichick. He and Saban actually scouted on the road for Belichick, and he said that whole thing where he goes in the press conference with the cut-off sleeves and he looks like somebody he picked up off the street and he mumbles, he said, 100% an act. He's like, he's trying to discourage more questions. He says that's – which most people figured anyway, but you figured that that was just his real personality and he would display it in, instead of being gregarious in a press conference. No. Apparently, he can be kind of a good dude to hang out with – kind of a fun, regular guy, but in a press setting, like, he so wants to discourage you from engaging that that's why he takes that countenance and that look and that approach.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was a period of time there where he was hanging around Gainesville a good bit because of his friendships that he had developed with Urban and with Billy Donovan when they were there. And, yeah, you'd hear really good things. Now, he wasn't looking to buddy-buddy with any of us in the media there in Gainesville, obviously, but you'd hear really good things from behind the scenes about what he was like to interact with if you weren't somebody with a microphone. My thing is, though, if Belichick is already so bored with not having a team to run that he's doing 4.5 hours and, like, Matt Rhule can't get his bathroom break in because Belichick is still on the telestrator breaking down the film or whatever, if you are a Washington Huskies fan and you have got a situation where he is coming to your campus – possibly, that's going to be fascinating. There's a lot of stuff going on. And
That's right.
I am going to be very curious to see, in the case of Steve Belichick, how involved he gets with that program. All right. Well, you got one other story from Washington, too. This is one that, look, we've talked, Chuck, about, in the case of Kalen DeBoer, a new situation where Kalen DeBoer is going to be dealing with press, with attention, with stuff that is not necessarily what he's used to at Alabama. And in the case of Kalen DeBoer, he's got a situation here where maybe for the first time he's going to have to deal with some controversy for how you run a program. For those not familiar, Tybo Rogers is a running back, played at Washington, was not in any way an essential part of the team at Washington, but he was a running back who did participate in their college football playoff games. He was suspended for the 2023 Pac-12 title game. Well, now he's been charged in an alleged rape that had been reported to the Washington Title IX office. And so there's a whole story now that's out there.
Yeah, and the timeline is the story here.
Exactly. November 28th is when apparently the woman received a phone call from Rogers that she had made a social media post accusing him of raping her. She then reported to the Title IX office. Things go from there. The question, the obvious question is, if you knew there were rape allegations against this young man, why in the world did he, after getting suspended for the Pac-12 title game, then get out there and get a chance to play in the college football playoff games? Look, don't know what the explanation is, but what I do know is this. Kalen DeBoer, if he's at Washington, that is a local story. That is not a major national story. Because Kalen DeBoer is at Alabama, this will get a lot more attention. His handling of that, what he did, when he did it, should he have done it? Again, to be clear, nobody's saying Kalen DeBoer did something wrong. But the level of scrutiny this case will get at Alabama versus when he's at Washington is off the charts.
Absolutely agree with that. And as we have seen in college athletics, even at the highest level, whether it's a president at Oregon State, whether it's a head coach at a Big 12 school, if there are shadows, they can follow you to a new employer. That is absolutely the case.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.